Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show. We are talking about Imam Hussein alayhi salam and His Eminence's objectives.
قائماً على رأس الغلام وهو يفحص برجليه بل حسين عليه السلام يقول بعداً لقوم قتلوه.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show. Our condolences to all the believers across the world, wherever you are, upon the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam that we commemorate in these months of Muharram and Safar. We wanted to talk a little bit about Imam Hussein alayhi salam's objectives on the talk show, so we decided to humbly invite Sayyid Agha Ali Raza. Let's go ahead and invite him and begin the talk show. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Agha Sayyid Ali Raza, it's such an honor to have you, and our condolences to you on the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Thank you so much for having me, and it is indeed a tawfiq to speak about Imam Hussein during these days. Let us begin by sending our salutations to the great Imam. Assalamu ala al-Hussein wa ala Ali ibn al-Hussein wa ala awlad al-Hussein wa ala ashab al-Hussein wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Inshallah, we'll be talking about Imam Hussein's objectives as narrated by him himself, not based on speculation or circumstantial evidence, but directly his own narrations.
Yes, Sayyid Agha Ali Raza, again, the months of Muharram and Safar, as we find in the words of Imam Khomeini, peace and blessings upon him, he very eloquently said that all that we have is from the months of Muharram and Safar. And so we find that every single year, just as the other great Ayamullah, these days of Allah, whether it is Ghadir that passed recently, or it is Hajj, or it is the holy month of Ramadan, these certain days and Ayamullah, they bring a new life and a new spirit into the Muslim Ummah, on the level of the Ummah as well as on the individual level. And one of these events, of course, is the martyrdom commemoration of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his companions and his relatives. Unfortunately, though, we find that there are some innovations when it comes to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And so this is why we wanted to invite you, kind of clarify the objectives of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and as you eloquently put in his own words, are the best way to understand it. We hand it over to you in the name of Allah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So one of the major misfortunes of our time is when you take some ritual, when you take some act of worship, and you empty it and completely divorce it from its core purpose.
Right.
And that makes it totally inert and neutralized and takes away its entire power, the spiritual power that is vested. Especially when you look at acts of worship that we have in Islam, these are acts of worship that have been divinely revealed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
So even if you're talking about Azadari, we're talking about the lamentation and the commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his family and his companions. This is something that has been taught to us, not the exact manners, but the concept in general. It has been taught to us by the Ahlul Bayt themselves. They would have these majalis, they would have the remembrance of Imam Hussein, and even in poetry.
Sure.
Apart from remembering the Masaib, the tribulations and the calamities and the tragedy, they would also have poets come up with poetry in order to remember.
Artistic forms
in
of expression
artistic forms.
In the morning of Imam Hussein.
Exactly. So this is something, this is one of the sunnah of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam.
Yes.
Now, considering that the Ahlul Bayt are divinely ordained leaders of society, and they are infallible leaders of society, they have this connection, this extreme existential connection with God's knowledge and His wisdom. When they engineer something, this is a precisely designed product. This is a precisely designed venture. It is not something that you can tamper with and change.
Sure.
Right? It is like a extremely sophisticated piece of machinery. And that shows that the designer and the engineer and the creator is extremely intricate in their wisdom and their thinking process.
Right.
So when you look at Azadari, if you take Azadari, if you take these lamentation ceremonies that we have in Muharram, and you take away the purpose, if you take away the goals and the objectives, in fact, we should put it in these words, if you take away the soul, then all you have remaining is a dead body.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. It is the soul that gives identity to these ceremonies. It is the,
and life.
And the same is true for all acts of worship. You can have namaz, you can have salat, without the soul of salat, the soul of tawheed, this would be ayn riya. It would be a useless activity.
Yeah.
In fact, Ayatollah Khamenei, hafazahullah, in one of his lectures, he quotes one of the great sages of Islam, one of the great mentors of akhlaq, and he says that this teacher said that if salat is performed, continuously performed, without the spiritual discipline of salat, without that concentration and focus upon God's tawheed, then in many times, in many instances, it will actually lead to kisawat al-qalb. It makes your heart like a stone, so that you can no longer receive God's guidance.
Yeah, very strange.
So these acts of worship that God has designed are like, they are so potent that if you tamper with them, if you try to kind of trick God into like just doing something apparently and in the external form without taking care of the internal discipline, the spiritual discipline, they sometimes actually become
harmful have a negative
just
impact.
Like medicine,
right?
If you consume
overdose,
medicine,
exactly,
if you consume according to the prescription of the doctor,
then it will work.
Then it will work. But if you do it by yourselves, if you try to like
less or more,
it's not gonna, it will either be useless or it will become harmful for you, right?
Deadly.
So Azadari has this core function, it has this core objective, and all of the rituals should be designed around the objective. They should be in harmony with the objective. Now rituals obviously through time and through history and through cultures, they take on new colors, and Islam allows that.
Sure.
Islam welcomes that because it has this universality.
Right.
But the only condition is that they should not be contrary to the
goals and objectives.
But in fact,
intention.
They would. They should be vessels that make this objective more applicable, more implementable within society.
Now, I know, like we want to eventually talk about the objectives that Imam Hussein alayhi salam had in his movement, right? But here, I'd like to kind of, you know, take a quick break and get your opinion on this. But, you know, can we say that the objective of Azadari is the commemoration of this mission of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, along with the martyrdom? I mean, can we say that? Yeah.
Absolutely. The entire function of Azadari, according to the mindset and the view and the viewpoint of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, and also the great scholars throughout history, is to remember, to rekindle the fire, the flame of the mission of Imam Hussein.
Yes.
And you see, the interesting thing about Azadari is, and this is something that even our brothers from within the Sunni scholars, and even some scholars of sociology and anthropology within the Western world have said this about the Shia, that the interesting thing about the of Azadari is that it couples together and brings together the intellectual with the emotional.
Yes, right.
So it is a kind of tawheed of the mind and the soul and the heart.
MashaAllah.
So you see, in Azadari, a scholar comes, he explains to you the intellectual aspect of Karbala, the intellectual aspects of the rational teachings of Islam, and then they are backed up by the emotional remembrance of the great sacrifice that was Imam Hussein. And then when the Mominin, they cry, it is like rain falling down upon fertile land. So it seeps in, those ideas, those teachings, they seep into the soul and therefore become a kind of a fuel for action.
MashaAllah. And well, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think this is an important point that you know, the Muslims and the believers out there should really understand, and that is this idea of keeping these two aspects together.
Exactly.
Right? If you separate this intellectual or reformational aspect, I mean, bringing up the intellectual level of the people in accordance with the objectives of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, along with this emotional aspect with the martyrdom and the tears, and this commemoration of the tragic aspect as well. These two together, like two wings of a bird, for example, will make you fly, excuse me.
Exactly.
But if you don't have one of these two, either the weeping and the mourning in this aspect, or you don't have the intellectual, then you won't reach anywhere, if you'd like to comment.
Exactly. So if someone simply understands the mission of Imam Hussein, or even because the mission of Imam Hussein is equal to Islam itself, right?
Yes.
If someone understands Islam, deeply understands Islam, say a PhD professor in some university of the world who has spent the entire life, his own entire lifetime researching Islam.
Yes. Right? Mm.
So intellectually, rationally, academically, he understands how Islam works. He understands Islam's history, its teachings, everything. But at the same time, you see that many of these professors, they're not Muslims. Mm. They might even be atheists in many of these universities in the
world. Mm.
So mere rational understanding does not automatically lead to action, does not automatically lead to a heart-based inclination and affiliation with an ideology.
Right, right.
On the other, so it is basically, so that entire rationality, that entire knowledge is neutralized.
Sure.
In many of our narrations, in many of the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt, the Ahlul Bayt warn us about ilm min dunil amal. Ilm without action, knowledge without action.
Sure, sure.
And they warn us over and over again, right in the beginning, like if you go through this grand book, Al-Kafi, right in the beginning, in the chapter related to knowledge.
Right.
You see these warnings coming over and over and over again. This was something that the Ahlul Bayt were very concerned about.
Mm.
They say that if someone's knowledge reaches a point that it is going beyond his action, then he needs to stop and increase his action first.
Sure.
Right? So this balance needs to be, because true knowledge, according to the Ahlul Bayt, they explicitly say this, true knowledge is knowledge that transforms into that action. And obviously action is sometimes physical action, sometimes it's internal action, that affiliation, that love for truth. So we understand that sometimes if you have knowledge, even deep knowledge,
yes,
even comprehensive knowledge, that in the eyes of the Ahlul Bayt is no knowledge. It is it is the essence of ignorance.
Right. Because it doesn't have
because
action.
Because it has no action. It has no purpose. It is useless. It is just
knowledge, it seems like it's information.
It's information, and not only that, it's just a kind of leisure activity, right? It's just wasteful lahulab.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The only difference is some people waste their time watching football all night, right? And this guy, he wastes his time because he's not doing
implementing it into action.
Yeah, because he wastes his time just reading books, right? Because he's never going to come to action,
So and on the other hand,
this is the one aspect. On the other hand, if you have, if the only thing that you have is spiritual and emotional affiliation and connection with some idea, but you don't understand what that idea is, then this by default is the very definition of ignorance.
Right.
And then what is the difference between you, a mu'min, and some other individual in some other ideology? If you talk to a Hindu who's raised
he also in that emotionally fervently believes whatever
exactly.
he believes in.
And he might go to his place of worship and cry as well, right? Because of that training and conditioning that the society has, and his family and society and upbringing has brought from him. And the same is true for Buddhists, the same is true for Christians and Jews and even atheists.
Right.
You see right now in the West that sometimes the radical and fascist nature of people who are anti-religion is far greater, their emotional, the way that they get all worked up in debates and it is far more than any religious person that you would ever find. So mere emotion without understanding something can actually lead you to a completely divergent path. And Amirul Mu'mineen, he warns us about this, alayhi salam. He says that if your aqaid, and which is kind of one portion of aqaid is emotional affiliation and connection to something, to an idea. If they are not based on good, deep, strong rationality, then a storm, a change in the socio-political environment, in cultural environment, can completely uproot everything and lead you
in your faith,
lead you totally astray. So both of these complement one another, and that is the hikmah, that is the wisdom of why God has given these different dimensions to the human soul. There's the dimension of understanding something, then there is a dimension of accepting iman, of submitting to that understanding, and then there is the direction of practically a dimension of practically implementing them.
Sure,
so you have these three dimensions and they need to work together. If they are separated from one another, if you have action without emotional affiliation and understanding, absolute ignorance. If you have emotional affiliation without understanding or practical implementation, again, absolute ignorance. And if you have knowledge, comprehensive, vast knowledge, millions of books, you are no better than Google. Right now, Google is probably the most knowledgeable thing on earth, right? But it has no place in God's hierarchy of things.
So I'm sorry I had taken you a little bit off track, but I think it was quite beneficial. You were talking about the objectives of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and we had left off where you were speaking about how the commemoration and the Azadari needs to rekindle and revive and remind the people of that objective of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and that too in the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself.
Now, Imam Hussein's mission, his struggle, his entire movement is central to Shia Islam.
Right.
Central to the very identity of Shia Islam. So scholars have written about this at length throughout history. But still, the main source of understanding what Imam Hussein was trying to do
is
the best and the most authentic and the most powerful source is his words himself. So he is the best witness of what was going on in his soul and in his mind, right? So if we refer to his words, we see that he says explicitly that in one of his sermons, when he starts his movement, he says, indeed, I have not risen up in order to spread corruption, in order to spread tribulation, in order to spread warfare, or in order to get hold of worldly riches and worldly authority in that worldly and secular sense. But innama, only and only, I have risen up in order to enjoin and command and order society to go towards virtue and go towards truth, and to stop society and to prohibit society from going towards falsehood and going towards vice and evil. So this is what we call in Islam al-amr bil ma'ruf wa nahy anil munkar. And these are his exact words. Inni urid an amura bil ma'ruf wa anha anil munkar. And then he says that what I, and then he summarizes this, right? He says that my intention is the islah, it is the correction of the ummah of my grandfather and my father. Right?
Subhanallah.
So correction, bringing it back onto the right path through Amr bil Maruf wa Nahi anil Munkar. So to summarize, to make it very understandable for everyone, Imam Hussein is the symbol of Amr bil Maruf wa Nahi anil Munkar. Of spreading and propagating and commanding truth and goodness, while stopping and prohibiting in any way and form evil and vice
and falsehood,
and falsehood from spreading in society. And this is the core idea. Now, if we look at Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar within Islamic teachings, we find that we in Islamic teachings we have this set of aqaid, things that you need to believe in. And everyone knows those, the five foundations of religion, right? And then you have your practical duties, which are sometimes called furu'at, or the branches of religion.
Furu'ud-deen,
so you have the roots of religion, usul-ud-deen, and then you have the furu of deen, which are the branches of religion, right? And these branches are, if we translate them in a more understandable manner, they are the practical responsibilities of a person.
Right.
So the usul-ud-deen are what you need to believe in, what you need to understand. Intellectually as well as emotionally, you need to believe and understand these, and then you need
the
to practically. Furu'ud-deen
is the practical,
is the practical implementation of those ideas.
It's interesting. It's very related to what we were talking about, the aspect of knowledge, aql, and then the emotions, and then the practical implementation. So this is kind of going along those same lines.
Every piece of Islam that you study, you will find that it is the manifestation of God's tawhid. So everything is together.
Right.
It's one and the same. And if you separate these things, it leads to divergence, it leads to corruption.
Sure.
It leads to an annulment of God's plan and His software, because Islam is God's software for society, for the individual as well as the community at large.
So you were talking about the Usuluddin and the Furuuddin. Yes.
Now, if you look at the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, when they are listing the Furuuddin, and there are many narrations that are which deal with this, you find that they speak about Salat, about Sawm, about Hajj, about Jihad, about Zakat, etc., etc. And then, if you look at the matrix of how these ideas, they form an hierarchy, they form a system, right? So you find that you have two terminologies that are at the core of all of these furu. So they are, in a manner of speaking, they are the keys to the rest of the furu.
Interesting.
And in a hierarchic sense, they supersede the other furu. So if these two exist, the other will be able to be implemented in society in the true form.
Sure.
But if these two are annulled or abrogated or put aside, then even though you have Salat and Sawm and Jihad, they might not only be neutral and useless, some people might actually use them for sin. So as the ulama remind us from history in our Azadari sessions, in our Majalis, they tell us that even the soldiers and the generals from the army of Yazid
went to pray.
They would pray. They would pray with
on time.
Congregation on time.
Many of them were the Hafiz of the Quran.
Many of them were Hafiz of the Quran. And
matter of fact, the famous statement that they said, kill Hussein sooner so that we can reach the Salat.
Exactly, exactly. So you see that when certain elements are removed from these acts of worship, these acts of worship themselves can transform into manifestations of evil.
And manifestations of evil, sin.
Exactly. They become sin. Even though outwardly, they are...
it's quite scary.
It's pretty scary. And it is something that we need to think
about.
What's
interesting when you were talking about the hierarchy, right? So, Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar usually comes towards the bottom side of the list.
Exactly.
It'll be like number 7 or number 8. But here, I think you're taking us towards a very different view on these furu'uddin. I mean, if you continue, please.
Unfortunately, one of the great tragedies of Muslim society is that sometimes, and we see this in the Hawza as well, you start reading a book in class, in your classrooms, and then the semester goes by, and sometimes you don't read the most important chapters, which are at the end of the book.
Right.
So this is something that happens. But tragically, in society, Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar are seldom discussed. Whereas in the narrations of the
Even in the books, right? In the books, it comes like, you know,
it
like
starts
I said.
With taharat.
Yeah, it starts with taharat, or even in like in the aqaid books, if you read the theological books, right? You have salat, and then you have like som, and then you have, you know, khums, and you have zakat, and then really towards the bottom, right before tawalla and tabarra, is you have amr bil ma'ruf nahi anil munkar.
Yeah, exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
And so this is really interesting. And you're saying is that if amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar is not at the forefront, then these other ones will be put into danger.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is what you're explaining.
So if you look at the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt, you see that there are two obligations that every Muslim has, which are the keys to the rest of these things. So what are those? One is Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, because this is a package. These are not two separate things. And the other is Wilaya, which is interesting. If you look at this famous hadith of Buni al-Islam ala khamsin,
Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi
exactly, alayhi salam. So you see that he lists some of the furuat al-deen, and then he reaches wilaya, and then he talks about how wilaya is miftahu hunna. It is the key to the rest. If the wilaya does not exist, then none of these will become meaningless, right? And obviously here, wilaya is in terms of the practical implementation. It's not just the
internal
exactly.
the batini
yeah because we're talking about furuat ad-din, we are talking about the responsibilities of the people, and in that sequence they talk about wilaya. So they're not the imam is not just shifting from practical duties to something that is intellectual and emotional in nature, or from the aqaid, from the beliefs. No, he's talking about wilaya. So this is a common word. Sometimes when you talk about wilaya, you're talking about believing in divine authority, submitting to divine authority, and then sometimes the word wilaya, when it is
implementing
used, is the implementation of what that entails. Right?
This is quite interesting, because based on the tradition, you have things that are all being implemented on the ground. So the Salah is being implemented, Hajj is being implemented, the other ones, you know, Saum is being implemented on the
Zakat
ground.
Is being implemented.
And so it doesn't make sense for him to bring these things, that four things that are being implemented on the ground, and then bring one that's ideological. No. So, you know, very well put that this is also being implemented on the ground.
Even though when we talk about wilaya, it is the wilaya which is implementable or practical wilaya is obviously closely linked and is a manifestation and completely inseparable from theoretical wilaya.
Right.
Because theoretical wilaya tells you what to believe in terms of divine authority, and then practical wilaya tells you what to do with that belief.
Sure, right?
So that is the
traditions.
In the traditions, the foundation of all the furuat, the root of all the furuat. So just as the root of religion, the usuluddin, are the foundation for all of the furuat, within the structure of the furuat themselves, the branches, the primary, the primacy lies with wilaya. So if you do not have wilaya, if you're not following divinely ordained authority, all of the other branches of religion, they become neutralized, they have no effect, and they might at times be unacceptable to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, right? So as Amirul Mu'mineen says in many of his famous narrations, he says, "Ana salatul mu'min wa siyamuhu."
Right.
Me, following me, believing in me is the salat of a true believer and the siyam of a true believer. And then in another narration we have this, that if someone does not believe and submit to the wilaya and follow the wilaya, and obviously following the wilaya is the purpose of believing in the wilaya.
Right,
or
right.
Simply just believing in it intellectually.
It's that whole knowledge and actions.
Exactly, as we explained earlier. Right?
And the love aspect of it too, the emotional aspect of.
So Amir al-Mumineen alayhi salam, in another tradition, he says that if someone does such and such and such and such acts of grand worship.
Thousands and thousands.
Thousands
of
Hajj and Safa, Marwa. And this,
Viyat.
Yeah, and then dies in a state of total piety near the Kaaba and so on and so forth. Still does not have wilaya,
it's useless.
So this tells you the importance of wilaya. Then straight after wilaya, if you're making the hierarchy, right? Straight after wilaya, so wilaya is the commander-in-chief of all the furuat. Then straight after wilaya, the wise commander-in-chief is Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. And it's absolutely rational. If you do not have Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, through time, through progress, through laziness, through apathy, through the conspiracies of the enemies, through the conspiracies of the carnal soul itself, the other forms of worship will lose their meaning, and then slowly they will be totally put aside. So you see in many of our communities, many of our brothers and sisters, unfortunately, they neglect their prayers. They sometimes might even neglect their fasting. And khums and zakat and all of these are the same, right? Because Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar is not there. Now the interesting thing about Amar bil Ma'ruf, and I'm just summarizing things, we do not have time to kind of list all of the narrations, but there's this extremely frightening narration about Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. Apart from the fact that there are narrations that say that it is one of the roots of all of the branches, and this is what keeps the branches alive. This is what nourishes the branches with the with sustenance that it socially and individually requires. But it one of the narrations says that if you neglect Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, then the azab, the punishment that will come from God, will be a special kind of punishment. Normally, punishment that comes from God, divine retribution, is only for the criminals, right?
Sure.
It's only for those who have
committed
willfully
sins,
waged war upon God and upon true human values, natural human values. But if you're not doing Amar bil Ma'ruf, if the Mu'mineen are not doing Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, they say that the retribution of God will be such that it will not be exclusive, it will not be limited to the criminals, but it will take you as well. Why? Because you neglected your core duty.
Right.
If you put this alongside that entire body of teachings of Islam, which tell us what a mu'min is, what the position of a mu'min is within society, starting from a family, going up to political level, the fact that a mu'min is, every mu'min is the ambassador of the Imam, He is the political representative, the social, the economic, the spiritual representative of the Imam. Mm. And his duty is to be like a doctor in society, to heal the sick, to teach the sick. He's a teacher and a doctor.
Right.
At a lower level, just like his Imam. His Imam is the comprehensive, the absolute, the perfect teacher and doctor of humanity. But every moment throughout the chain is responsible to be a smaller version of that same teacher. And so we have in this famous verse that Imam alayhi salam, he says that the people are divided into three groups. They are either alim, they are the knowledgeable ones, who are the teachers of society, or they are muta'allim, they are the students, they are continuously engaged in learning the truth, or they are riffraff, they are useless. They're like extras in a movie. They don't really make any difference. They're insignificant. So every mu'min has this responsibility within society, right? At his own degree, obviously.
Yeah. Well,
so just if I...
Go ahead. Sure. No problem.
So if the teacher and the doctor is neglecting to do their core duty, which is healing the people.
And the people, telling them the sick about, people die.
Then and the sick people die.
It's the doctor's fault.
It's the doctor's fault because of criminal negligence.
Right.
So God is teaching us about criminal negligence long before anyone came up with this terminology.
Sure.
In any
so-called civilized world.
In a civilized world. So that is very, it shakes us to the core. That if you neglect Amar Bil Ma'ruf, and the rational reason is because if you do not have Amar Bil Ma'ruf, just like Wilaya, if you do not have Amar Bil Ma'ruf Nahi Anil Munkar, interestingly, even though it is after Wilaya, even the Wilaya will be attacked.
Sure.
Right?
There's nobody there to defend and protect
and
truth and justice and oppose falsehood. One thing, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to kind of jump in, right? One of the things that perhaps people might start to think, and I think the root of this thought is most probably you know, Zionist propaganda, imperialist propaganda, evil forces propaganda in general, right? Is that this Amr Bil Ma'ruf and Nahi Anil Munkar, you know, this promotion and encouraging and teaching of good, and on the other hand, this prevention and refraining people from evil, that this means, you know, for example, you pick up a stick in your hand and you walk down the street and, you know, whoever's doing good, well, okay, you know, no big deal. But if somebody's doing bad, you just take that stick and you start whamming people left and right. And really, this is unfortunately something that not only comes up in the minds of some Muslims, but it comes into the minds of the vast majority of non-Muslims, right?
Exactly.
But as you had, and you talked a little bit about it, but I wanted to put it in this context so we could clear the air up a little bit, right? That this Amr Bil Ma'ruf Nahi Anil Munkar, this is not something where you're walking around with a stick, you know, whamming people on their face for
fact,
whatever reason. It's the doctor who's going there with mercy and love, trying to heal the people.
Exactly.
Just as, for example, Jesus Christ went and healed people who were sick. If you'd like to elaborate on that.
See, throughout history, wherever Islam has been, there has been divergence within Islam. There has been corruption within the Muslim Ummah. All of these caricatures of true teachings of Islam, are you will only see them within the socio-political current of that divergence and corruption. So if you talk about the Talibanization of Islam, it's not in the true interpretation of Islam, it is
in a divergent strain.
And when you start re-engineering these, you re-engineer Al-Qaeda, you re-engineer ISIS, you re-engineer Taliban, you re-engineer Boko Haram, you see where these links lead to, and alhamdulillah, you will always find the great civilization that is constantly talking about freedom and justice and so on and so forth. These empty slogans. The United States, the Western powers, and obviously global Zionism.
Right.
So even in history, when you talk, when you had these caricatures of Islamic teachings, if
these
you had
negative,
the Khawarij,
negative characters
exactly,
which we're talking about
exactly.
right now.
This this kind of extremism which completely goes out of the Islamic paradigm and turns it into some sort of a monster. If you look at the Khawarij during the time of the companions of the Prophet and Amirul Mu'mineen, again outcasts from the true teachings.
Right.
If you look at the Umayyads,
again,
a total socio-political current which was corrupt and was an enemy of Islam, and they promoted such activities within society. And then the Abbasids and the other kings and the monarchs that always tried to exploit the power and the potency of religion in order to get their own agendas forwarded. Just like today, the fact that they fund and create these terrorist groups, or they allow these terrorist groups to have offices within their own capitals, right? Like you have this,
the MKO is, based in Albania, Western
I remember the day when they had, many years ago, when they had invited members of the MKO into the American Congress.
Rudy and Giuliani and these guys are regular people that go over there and meet with these people.
Attend their conventions.
And so Michael Pompeo and you know, these guys.
So, but obviously we do not, there's nothing else that you can expect from a system of government and a civilized, so-called civilization that just yesterday was the remembrance of the Hajj flight. The flight, the Iranian passenger aircraft, which the American Navy had maliciously and knowingly blown out of the sky, killing, I think it was...
it was almost over 100 people.
Over 100 people, yeah, 66
innocent
kids.
Civilians.
66
and they were all civilians.
And then, to add insult to injury, they gave military awards.
Yeah, they gave medals.
They gave medals to the to the person commanding the ship, as well as all of the
Navy personnel
In there, right? So obviously, this is what we have come to expect.
So you expect these?
Yeah.
And these are, I mean, if we're talking about this, even though it's a little bit of a tangent, but I'd like to throw that in there. These are the same elements that supported financially, as well as many other means, you know, Saddam in his 8-year war against the Islamic Republic of Iran. They provided chemical weapons, logistical support, I don't know, you name it, oil, in order for him to come and kill innocent Iranians on this side
Saddam
of the world.
Hussein, if you look at like many of the Islamic countries, as sectarian groups, armed sectarian groups that kill Muslims, blow up mosques. If you look at those, if you look at their history, they're all linked to proxy governments that work for the United States, work for international government, international Zionism, and so fitna, like everywhere in the world, everywhere. If you have a corrupt leader in the world, if you have a dictatorial tyrant in the world, if you have a bloodthirsty monarch in the world, if you have a person whose hands are bloodied with the blood of millions of innocent people, and you just start reading about that person in contemporary times after World War II and so on and so forth, you will find that somewhere in the background is either the esteemed government of the United Kingdoms or the esteemed government of the United States. So it is really silly.
They sound similar too. One's the United Kingdom, one's the United States.
United States, it sounds similar because...
It's interesting, and perhaps this is a subject that we can bring on another talk show one day, is these similarities between the United Kingdom and the United States.
Yeah,
so hopefully
idea.
I will hold you to that, inshallah, for next time.
So
we were kind of talking about these negative caricatures that are painted by the enemies of Islam, and that, you know, Amr bil Maruf and Nahi anil Munkar is not that crazy idea that somebody's walking around the street, you know, and beating people up.
So our message to our brothers and sisters, one of the things that we need to do is spread the true idea, learn the true idea of Amar bil Maruf and Nahi anil Munkar from the viewpoint of the Ahlul Bayt, the true interpreters and the true teachers of Islam, and then tell the people about, we were talking about this in Ghadir as well, that unfortunately we have made Islam a cult religion, a community religion. It is something that is we do as an extracurricular activity on weekends. No, we need to be, to use the word in a with
sure,
a bit
sure.
of levy, we need to be evangelical. We need to go out in society. We need to do this propagation. Go to the downtrodden. Tell them what true Islam is. And when you tell them what true Islam is, obviously you will show them the true meaning of Amar bil Maruf and Nahi anil Munkar. And on the other side, tell them that all these different caricatures of Islam, these villainization of Islam, this turning Islam into a monster, these are conspiracies of the West and their intelligence organizations themselves, right? So it has nothing to do
in order to subdue Islam, in order to prevent the growth of Islam.
As Imam Khamenei said in his famous letter to the youth of the West, he said, okay, just don't listen to me, don't listen to your media. Look at the Quran.
Don't listen to Buddha, go
look
to the source.
Quran. Yeah, look at the source.
Make your own decision.
Maybe, as a for sake of argument, maybe we haven't understood the Quran properly. But you and your God, right? Read the Quran.
And it's interesting, it's like perhaps, you know, fine, maybe, as you said, maybe we have not understand the Quran properly, but, you know, for God's sakes, those other guys have definitely not
they have,
learned
they have
the Quran
nothing to
properly.
Do with Quran.
You know, why are you listening to
exactly.
those guys?
Exactly.
But as you said, go to the Quran yourself.
It's because
find
of the
pure
media.
Teacher.
It's a bombardment of the mainstream media.
Yeah.
And then the interesting thing about, I'm sorry I'm digressing, but this
no,
might be important. The interesting thing about Western new barbarism, what they call civilization, is that they have privatized tyranny as well. In the past, normally the Gestapo would be a government organization. So everyone knew who to point towards, right? Everyone knew, okay, it's Hitler is the villain, right? The Gestapo is the villain. But later on, they understood that this had this was expensive for them. Socially and politically, this was expensive for them. So they privatized the entire tyranny, especially the tyranny of the mind and the soul, the oppression of the mind and the soul. So right now, we're viewing Twitter, we're using Facebook, we're using Instagram, and we think that we're using private sector things, right? These have nothing to do with government agendas. But when you look at them, they're on the same page.
Yes.
They're on the same page.
And this information is out there.
It's out there.
For everyone to be able to read
exactly.
how these different social media and media in general platforms are connected most of the time, if not
owned
all the time,
by the same people.
Directly or indirectly by governmental agencies.
Exactly. Or people behind governmental agencies.
Sure.
So the same oligarchs, the same people, the same group that tries to control, which we talked about again in Ghadir, we talked about that 1%, which are the Aimmatul Kufr.
Right.
They are the leaders of ignorance and of willful war
and
against
falsehood.
God.
Yeah.
Falsehood against. So wherever you find these caricatures, it's just like it's a rule of a thumb, right? Wherever you find these caricatures, this is one of the conspiracies of shaitan.
And so you were saying that the brothers and sisters first and foremost should go and they should learn the correct meaning of Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al
Munkar. One of the first conditions of doing Amr bil Ma'ruf Nahi al Munkar is to learn how to do Amr bil Ma'ruf. If someone does not know how to do this, and obviously as society has progressed and become more sophisticated, the technology of Amr bil Ma'ruf needs to be updated as well. It's not a basit and simple society like in Medina, where people were like, their minds were not that sophisticated and complex and not that confused either. Right now, it is a complex society. You need to know how to do Amr bil Ma'ruf so that you're not defeating the purpose while doing what you're not playing according to the Satan's rule book, for example.
Now, does this, I kind of wanted to ask this question because I'm pretty sure we're going towards the end of the talk show too, time-wise at least. And if there are certain specific things that you do want to bring up, we'll also bring those up. I'm just kind of, you know, anyways. One of the things here with Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, sometimes people bring it down to a very ahkami, jurisprudential level, right? So Amr bil Ma'ruf means, well, one, let's add the two misconceptions or the caricatures together, right? Is the time for namaz, a very fiqhi, jurisprudential, action-oriented thing. And then the guy's coming with a stick and he's beating you up that you need to do namaz, or he's beating you up. Recently, you saw this very heavy propaganda against the Islamic Republic Iran in hijab, right? Another practical thing, another action that needs to be oriented, and the police are coming and batoning women. What's really crazy, we did a talk show on this, but the videos that you, if you followed up, they were like videos made in Albania or somewhere like that. But regardless, these two caricatures of the individual with the stick going around telling people to keep a beard, telling people to, you know, wear hijab or to do namaz because it's namaz time of al-waqt. This is not what we're talking about at this point in time. If you'd like to open that
Absolutely.
Up a little bit.
See, in fact, there are several topics that can kind of get together here. First of all, we're not talking about like going around with a stick, right?
Right, so that was the first thing.
That's the absolute.
Please don't pick up a stick.
Because the interesting thing is that
at home or outside,
Amar bil Ma'ruf, physically, right, is first of all, it's a jurisdiction of the Islamic government. So even within Iran, you cannot go and stop, like if someone does not have hijab, for example.
Sure.
Right? Or someone is doing something that is criminal in nature. You can't just go there. It's not the Wild West. You can't take out a gun and say, okay, hands up, or take out a stick, or like. So all of these are just fantasies that the Western media
has. The Wild West.
In fact, if you. Exactly. These are things that, interestingly, the civilization of falsehood throughout history, it always ascribes things to truth. To the resistance front.
These flaws which are inherently within itself.
In themselves. So you saw that during the time of the martyrdom of Imam Ali alayhi salam, things that were more deserving for the other party were attributed to Imam Ali. So when he was martyred,
what is
people
he doing in the masjid?
What is he doing in the masjid? He used to pray. Wow. People didn't know that. In Sham, in Syria, they didn't know that.
Right.
Anyway, returning to the topic.
So the first thing is the stick is not allowed.
That is not allowed. Physical, going physically in and coercing people into doing something, that is the jurisdiction and that is the exclusive right of the Islamic government and the Islamic ruler. So sometimes you do not have an Islamic government, but if you want to do Amar bil Ma'ruf physically, you need the authority and the permission of the Islamic ruler.
And we don't see this anywhere.
And we don't
we
see
need
this
to
anywhere.
Bring this
and
also
obviously
out.
When the Islamic ruler wants to give out such a permission, he will look at all of the conditions, especially the fact that you, the person who's suggesting to do such a thing, have all the knowledge base and the training and so on and so forth.
Sure.
So basically you need to be like a qualified police officer in order to implement. So
it's of a high level. It's almost
exactly
impossible.
It's totally rational, right?
Yeah.
You do this in secular society as well.
Yeah.
You don't just allow people to go around.
Well, in secular society, the police will kill you.
Alhamdulillah.
You know, George Floyd, recent thing you saw in France.
In France,
With the Muslim who also the police killed. So, you know,
the youngster,
I mean, if we're comparing, you know, yardsticks, then this guy is hitting you with a yard, that guy is shooting you to death.
Exactly. So, first of all, that is not allowed in Islam. You're not allowed. Private citizens, private mu'mineen are not allowed.
This is vigilantism.
This vigilantism is not allowed in
Islam.
This
is not Amr bil Ma'ruf.
Exactly. So just going around, like blowing things up. And this is an image created by Hollywood. And then perpetuated and enforced by the West's own proxies within the Islamic world.
Al-Qaeda,
ISIS, Taliban, etc. Right? So this has nothing. That is why you never see any people from the resistance front, from people affiliated to true Islam, which is manifested today in the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic government in Iran. You never see them going around in different countries like beating people up for Salat or beating people up for Som. Except for in the lies spread by mainstream media. So that is the first point. The second point is that when you're talking about Amar bil Ma'ruf Nahi Anil Munkar, when we've already said that for normal mu'mineen, you're not supposed to do this physically. You can't force someone to come and pray or do anything else. Right? So what does Amar bil Ma'ruf means? It's as we will inshallah discuss in the next session, it is Kalimatul Haqq in the Sultan al-Jair, I think is the word. It's saying
Sultan
the truth. It's saying the truth. It's basically doing what Malcolm X did in society, right? Saying the truth, not being afraid. Saying the truth in front, right in front of the eyes, like Hazrat Musa alayhi salam and Hazrat Harun alayhi salam did. Izhab ila Fir'aun innahu tagha. Go to Fir'aun. Stand in front of him, face him, and tell him that he is false.
He's surely
so
rebellious.
It is intellectual jihad. And this brings
this
us
kind of like a jihad-e-tab'een.
Exactly.
As Imam
so jihad-e-tab'een, the entire idea is, as we have explained in some of our other lectures, it is a Quranic idea and then it is an implementation of Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. So jihad-e-tab'een, go out into society. Go out into society, tell people about Islam, tell them about the falsehood of the other conflicting systems.
And it's very effective.
Of thought.
I think we should really make sure that the viewers understand how effective that is. So for example, in a lot of the campuses of the United States of America, they have a very active, you know, Voice for Palestine exactly. type student organizations.
Voice for Palestine, Jews for Palestine, etc. Like we can build so many bridges with other people. Like,
and what I was saying was that they were so effective that the Zionist regime has gone out of its way to shut down, you know, these few college students who come together and voice their support for Palestine.
They have in fact made BDS illegal
right.
in the United Kingdoms.
Right.
Now, what could be more fascist than that?
Right.
Mm. If I do not buy something made in the Zionist entity, this can itself be interpreted as criminality. Mm. It's ridiculous. Mm. Where are all your ideals of free economy, of liberal democracy?
It's interesting. We had a talk show once about the shutting down of the Islamic Center of England, right? Exactly. And we had said at that talk show at that time was that this taking away of the religious freedom is not going to stop at a Muslim, Shia, Islamic Center of England.
It
it's going to spread.
Exactly.
And they're going to eventually infringe on the freedoms and the liberties of non-Muslim British people.
Unless you comply with them. If all the churches in the United Kingdoms and in the United States and in the Western world, they become centers of LGBT plus Q, R, S, T, Y, Z. They become centers of Zionism. They become these pedestals on
Zionist proxies.
Zionist proxies, and they become places of worship for worshipping this Zionist ideology and this new Nazism, which is spread by Israel and the Zionist entity, and all other and places of promotion for all other anti-divine, anti-human patterns of thought, then no government will have any problem with them. It reminds you of the verse of the Quran. It says, the Quran says that the enemies of Islam, they will never be satisfied with you unless you become like them, you follow them, you become subservient to them, right? So yes, if these places of worship, even if today, if right now, all of the Islamic centers in the Muslim world, in the Western world, were to declare that, okay, we'll allow all sorts of these corruptions that you're trying to force down our throat, they will all be opened once again.
Right. Right? They'll probably get funding too.
They'll probably get funding as some Jarianat and some currents within the Muslim community do get funding even right now. So if you're talking about the Shirazis, for example, in the United Kingdom.
Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei says that they are funded by the treasury of the United Kingdom.
So as Imam Khamenei, Hafizullah, said, we reject American Sunnism, which is not American Sunnis, because as you know,
the British
certain
Shias,
fi qulubihim maradha, they know the truth, but they will come out and say something that is totally
ridiculous.
False, absolutely ridiculous. American Sunnism is Sunnism created by the CIA.
Right.
After studying Islam, studying the weaknesses of the Muslim community, they come up with a sectarian ISIS Sunnism.
Right.
Or on the other hand, a totally inert form of Sufism, which has nothing to do with society. Let everyone die, we are praying in our mosque, right? This kind of Sunnism is American Sunnism. And on the other hand, you have this British Shiaism, or we can also call it the Shiaism crafted and funded and formed and created this Frankenstein's monster within Buckingham Palace,
right?
By the MI6.
Right. Right.
And by Zionism, basically, America and the United Kingdoms are the most, they are the most significant partners and sponsors of international Zionism. So if we are talking about these two kinds of Shiaism, these are the Shiaisms that, this is the Shiaism which will fight Imam Zaman.
Right.
When he returns, Ajallahu ta'ala faraju
shaykh.
This is the type of Sunnism, American Sunnism, that will fight Imam al-Mahdi. When he arrives, ajallahu ta'ala faraju sharif. So, because they are the very antithesis of Islam.
Sure.
They are just like, they are like the fifth column within our community. So, if you are like them, then you will get your fundings.
You will get your funding.
You will get all your perks and all your facilities. But if you are telling the truth, that is
and
where...
This is the jihad-i-tabin.
And that is Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy anil Munkar, right? And then obviously it starts from the bottom. It starts from your own family. It starts with your own soul. You can even do Amr bil Ma'ruf about yourself, right?
Sure.
If you are scared of saying the truth, If you are lazy with regards to your duties, if you are lazy with regards to your supreme duty, which is learning Islam continuously, making that a priority in your life instead of your job and all of these other things, right?
Yes.
The core priority of a mu'min is learning Islam and then implementing it in his individual and social life, right? So you can start from there, then your family, Amar bil Maruf, teach your family about Islam, encourage them, create this cultural environment within the family where Islam is understood, its beauty is understood. In the words of the Imam alayhi salam, if people knew the beauty of our words, they would have no choice but to follow us.
Right, they would love to follow
us. They would be gravitated towards us. Don't you see how we are gravitated towards Imam Hussain alayhi salam? We have only seen a small glimpse of his existential beauty. And throughout these 1400 years, we have fallen in love with the, with that personality.
And more every year.
And more every year. And if you look at Arbaeen, it's like just overflowing with love. It is a festival of true spiritual love, right? And devotion.
Right, right.
Alhamdulillah. So it begins, it goes over there, and then right up to the top, to political affairs, to economic affairs, to speaking about the downtrodden, speaking about the oppressed, and and changing the narratives within society.
Right, mashallah.
So that was, as I believe, is the core mission of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. And that was why he says that I came out to reform and to correct the ummah of my grandfather and my father. And that is the same mission that we need to carry on. And that is, in fact, the same mission that has manifested itself in terms of a revolution in Iran, in terms of a system of government within Iran. The philosophy of Vilayat-e-Faqih is to implement, to bring forward, to create this culture within global society to be like Imam Hussain alayhi salam.
MashaAllah. Jazakallah. Thank you so much, Sayyid Agha Ali Raza, for joining us on the talk show. Again, our condolences to you and your loved ones on the martyrdom of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. And very beautiful points again brought up, inshallah. May Allah accept from all of us. And dear viewers, thank you for joining us on our very first Muharram talk show for this year. Inshallah, we hope to have many more, so join us on those talk shows as well. Our condolences to you and your loved ones and the believers wherever they are upon the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. That's all from us for now. Fi amanillah and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.